Blog Talk Radio.
Best-selling and award-winning author of true crime and crime fiction, Yvonne Mason is back with a brand new book, The Pink Canary, a book that delves into the life of a drag queen and a marvelous whodunit. You can find this and all of Yvonne's other works on Amazon.com or find Yvonne Mason on Facebook and Twitter.
You're gonna kill me.
Buy your copy of Pink Canary now.
Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. It is Friday night, June the 23rd at 8 o'clock Eastern Daylight Time. This is Off the Chain. I am your host, Yvonne Mason. And, of course, that was a piece of shameless promotion. That was done by my ad man, Chris Dunham, who does all of my books for my ads for my books. See, I can't talk again tonight, ladies and gentlemen. And that was The Pink Canary. If you love all things drag queen, you love all things Key West, and you love a good suspense, murder mystery, comedy all rolled into one, you definitely want to read The Pink Canary. And I have to give a shout out to Vicki Lane. I ran across her when I was looking for a professional drag queen to help me in the culture of the drag queen society and how one acts, thinks, speaks, talks, walks, even how they get ready for a show. And I came across Vicki and I sent her an email asking if she would be willing to donate her time to help me with this book. And she and I have become very good friends. In fact, she is in the book. And I cannot say thank you enough to Vicki. She was a premier drag queen in New York for many, many years. Then she moved up to Canada and performed there. And she has just really been a blessing in my life with this book and as a friend. Also, I have to thank my friend Peter Fondura. Peter, who is gay, is one of my best friends in the world, and he likes nothing better than to dress up in drag for Halloween. He is also in the book. His name is Penelope. He is the comic relief in the book. And Peter always said that he would, in order to become famous, he would have to die in a plane crash. Now he says he doesn't have to die in a plane crash because he is a main character in The Pink Canary. So if you love all things drag queen, you love all things comedy, and you love Key West, pick up this little book and read it. But I come with a disclaimer with this book. Please go potty before you sit down and read this book, or else you'll be changing your clothes. It is that funny. And with that being said, before I get author KJ Howe, I have to tell you guys that thanks to all of you, my listeners, to all the podcast listeners, to all of my guests, including my guest tonight, this woman talking to you tonight, almost can't tell you what I've got to tell you. We are 722 listeners away from 10,000 listeners just on this show. It does not include the podcast. We are well over 21,000 listeners when you include the podcast, and we're heard in over 67 countries. Ladies and gentlemen, if you don't think that's humbling, and if you don't think that it's an honor to bring this show to you all, to have the guests that I have, and they agree to come back, which I am humbled beyond words, and for y'all tuning in night after night and passing the show along, there's not enough words to express my appreciation for each and every one of you. The show will be a year old next month, and my goal was to have 10,000 listeners by the one-year anniversary, and we will get there. And I thank you so, so much. And with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, before, again, I introduce my guest tonight, Miss KJ Howe. It's going to be a fun hour. I have to include two new sponsors to the show. Both of them are authors. The first one is author Darren Cox, and he wrote a book called Don't Let the Enemy Steal From You, A Crown of Thorns to a Crown of Righteousness. And it goes like this. Don't let any man, anything, or any situation in your life ever steal the things that God has ordained for you to have. One of the greatest things of my generation that I see, one of the great things that breaks my heart, is I see a generation that has no idea of the destiny and the future and the hope that God has for our generation. I look at young people in hopelessness. There's so much. We have the cars, we have the entertainment, we have the lights, we have everything that the world could offer a generation, and yet there's never been a generation more unhappy, more depressed, more filled with hopelessness. So ladies and gentlemen, order David Cox's book today and check him out. Don't let the enemy steal from you a crown of thorns to a crown of righteousness. And then our second sponsor of the show, author Diane Mope, she has wrote the neatest little book, and it always ties my tongue up in knots when I am trying to promote it, so bear with me. She has a great new children's adventure to tell you about. Pepper Neely, Pet Sits, Magical Animals. In the first of Miss Mote's series, The Supernatural Pet Sitter, The Magic Thief, someone begins stealing the magic from Pepper's animal friend. She has to find the magic thief before the magic thief finds her. The Supernatural Pet Sitter by Diane Mote is now available on Amazon as an ebook or paperback. It's going to be a long, hot summer, ladies and gentlemen. If you have wee ones in your home or you know someone that has wee ones, order this book for them because they will have fun learning about the Supernatural Pet Sitter. Now, without further ado, I have this most interesting guest tonight that has been on the books for about 3 months. And as I was working up, not the questions I'm going to ask her, because y'all all know the show is not scripted, but the notes that I have, the interesting high points that I found, I ran out of paper. And I wrote my pencil down to a nub. This woman is absolutely amazing. I think she must have checked everything off of her bucket list that she had on her bucket list. Author K.J. Howe is the executive director of Thriller Fest, the annual conference of international thriller writers. A three-time Dauphine du Maurier Award winner, she completed her M.A. in writing popular fiction at Seton Hill University. K.J. is an avid traveler who has, ladies and gentlemen, listen to this, raced camels in Jordan, surfed in Hawaii, and dove with the great whites in South Africa. She became fascinated by the kidnap and ransom world after meeting Peter Moore, who is a British computer consultant who became the longest held hostage in Iraq and the only person to survive of the five men who were taken that day. Her book, The Freedom Broker, was featured as a dark delight in Time magazine. KJ, thank you so much for being here. I am just so awed by the things that you've been able to do in your life.
Well, thank you kindly for the wonderful introduction, and I'm excited to be here tonight to discuss everything from kidnap and ransom to drag queens. I like that.
I love my drag queens. They are sweet. But before we get to kidnap and ransom and drag queens and all the other good things that I like to tease our audience with, because as I told you before we went live, Johnny Carson taught me so well. My years of sitting up and watching him paid off big time. How in the world did you get from a little girl to a young woman doing all these things? Was any of this stuff on your bucket list as a child? Was writing on your bucket list, or was it just a path you were taking and kept getting detoured?
Definitely always wanted to be an author. That was a dream for me. I was an avid reader growing up. My family traveled extensively because my father worked in telecommunications. So we lived in the Middle East and in Africa, the Caribbean and Europe. And as a result, I was kind of thrown into new experiences, and I was always the new kid. And it was really nice to be able to have books to escape into, because you know what it's like when you have the pressure of always moving and always breaking into new crowds. And so I think that I lost myself in fictional escape. And when I did, I thought to myself, one day I really, really want to write.
Well, growing up and moving, you didn't move from city to city or even from state to state. You moved from country to country. And not only that, but you moved from culture to culture. How?
Absolutely.
How did it enrich you? How did it, I don't want to say harm, that's not the right word, but how did it negatively affect you? And yet, how did it enrich you?
Yeah, I loved the life, actually. And I think each, you know, child is different. I had two brothers growing up. And I think out of the three of us that I really enjoyed the travel and adventure probably the most. And I kind of, you know, it's like a duck to water. And I always loved, you know, tackling new things and having new challenges. And I think the cultural experience was very eye-opening. There's really no better education than travel. You get to see how different people do things. You can analyze how you do things and maybe change some things. And I feel as well when I was coming to writing and extrapolating my background into the present, is that I really wanted to write an international thriller because I felt a little bit like a child of the world. I was born in Toronto, Canada, right? But I've lived all over, and I continue to travel extensively. And so for me, it really was a perfect fit to do something international. And as far as harm goes, you know, there were some lonely times, right? I mean, so I was sent to boarding school when I was in my parents, when we moved to Saudi Arabia, there wasn't education at a certain level, so I had to go to boarding school and end up going to, you know, Salzburg, Austria, and Neuchâtel, Switzerland, and then back to Canada for university. And as a result, you know, it was always being shuffled here, shuffled there, and, you know, separated from your family at a very young age. So it was a really good opportunity to grow up fast, but as well, you know, it could have, you know, there was times when it did feel a little lonely, but I think that fits in great with an avid reader and a potential writer, because then your imagination lets loose.
And that's true, and you can be anywhere or be anybody that you want to when you read. And to be able, I can just imagine, because that's in my mind as a writer, in my mind, I see you racing camels in Jordan. Now, tell me, how in the world did that happen? And as much as I love riding my horses, when I had them, it's like being free. How did you feel? What was that experience?
It was absolutely exhilarating. I was in Wadi Rum, which is a beautiful area. If you ever have a chance to visit Wadi Rum in Jordan, I highly recommend it. And there's just miles and miles of desert and these incredibly large rock formations. It's breathtaking, really. And we were doing a tour there, and there was a group of you know, camel jockeys taking camels out, the special racing ones, because there was an upcoming race on the weekend, and out for, you know, jaunts to try and, you know, practice. And we started talking to them, and I said, can I give it a go? And they were very, very helpful and kind. And it was fascinating because one thing they do to make sure the camel can run as fast as possible is to make it throw up before the race, which is kind of a weird thing. But I learned that. And then, you know, they sort of taught you how to sit on the camel properly and, you know, how to lean forward and just make sure you're balanced because, you know, with those humps, right, it's a very different experience than a horse.
Yes.
And I have actually a photo on my website of me racing that camel. So if anyone's interested in seeing the live thing, I didn't get a video. Shame, but too bad.
I can just see this young woman on this camel racing across the desert. And, of course, the writer's mind goes into overdrive, and I'm thinking of Omar Sharif and all the desert movies I've seen and all the books I've read about the desert. And I'm thinking, now, if she's racing that camel across the desert and she gets lost from the rest of the party, how in the world is she going to find her way back? Because the desert's a very big, dry, lonely place.
I love the way your mind works. There's a story right in there. That'll be the next book.
You should write it. There you go. Take it and run with it. And then, all right, you dove with the great whites in South Africa.
Definitely. That was an incredible experience. You know, ironically, after I did it, there was an incident where a shark actually broke into the cage because the cage had been loosened by so many bumps. Thank goodness the person was uninjured, you know, and they're fine. But this is the real deal. I mean, we're talking, you know, right out in the ocean, you know, getting into a cage and having the sharks coming right at you. And it's exhilarating. There's no doubt about it.
Did you feel the enormity and the power? Because for people that don't understand about great whites, these fish get huge, and I'm not talking, ladies and gentlemen, a couple of feet long. They get what, up to 25, 30 feet long sometimes, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, 100%. They're massive, and when you see them from the boat and you realize, you know, how close they are to you, it's very intimidating indeed. But I was an avid scuba diver. I learned how to dive in Puerto Rico when we lived there, and then kind of continued in Saudi Arabia on the Red Sea. And so I'd had a lot of experience diving with sharks in general, but there's nothing like great white, to be honest with you. It's pretty impressive.
They're sort of like the alligators we have here in Florida. They have no natural predators, and they're the world's last dinosaurs.
Yeah, well said. Exactly. And, you know, they chum the waters with bait to attract them when they're doing the cage diving. And so, you know, they're kind of in that mode of eating, so you see them at their fiercest. So it was an experience to remember for sure. You know, it was great. And, you know, when I do those underwater scenes, I'll be all revved up, ready to go.
There you go. And you surfed in Hawaii. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I hear your eyes rolling and you shaking your head. Hawaii has some of the highest surf and some of the most unforgiving water, I think, in the world. I could be wrong. JK will correct me. I mean, KJ will correct me. But would it be fair to say that in itself, not everyone can run out there and do, not even the surfers we have in California or even here in Florida?
Well, I think it depends where you surf, right? If you go to the North Shore or if you go to Waikiki, and depends on the weather conditions as well, right? I mean, everything's fluctuating, but it's incredible. And when I first learned how to surf, actually, it was a real riot because I was at a conference, a writing conference in Waikiki area. And so I got a bunch of people together, including Jean Lesquois, the author, and Steve Barry, and William Bernhardt. And we all took a surfing lesson together, and it was an absolute riot. So, you know, surfing is something I think, you know, you can do at any level, right, which is fantastic. Mm-hmm. Some people can be on calm, really calm, you know, little waves and just get a feel for it. And another author that's actually a very, very talented and avid surfer is, I don't know if you've ever met him, is A.J. Tata. Do you know him at all?
No, I haven't met him.
Yeah, he's fantastic. And he's a former general in the, you know, brigadier, and he writes thrillers now. But anyway, he's an avid surfer, and he would be the one I would speak to about, you know, just how intense Hawaii is. But it's, I love sports, you know, I love adventure, so it's just fun to try different things and dabble in it all.
And would it be safe to say, because if you've heard any of my shows, you know that I believe in people making their dreams real. And so, and the fact that we only go around once. So would it be safe to say that if one has a penchant or a passion or a desire to do something they've never done before, whether it's diving with great whites, racing camels in Jordan, surfing in Hawaii, skydiving, parasailing, whatever it is, that they should do it at least once?
Wholeheartedly. I agree. I say seize the day and go for your dreams. You know, just even if it's like something, it doesn't have to be something, you know, kind of adventurous. It can be, you know, seeing a beautiful location in the world, like Victoria Falls, for example. You know, I set part of the book there, and it was a very special moment to enjoy the enormity of the beautiful nature there and the incredible sound of those falls. You know, that you can, it's like bringing the sensory details to life. And if you can do that by experiencing a place and then putting it into a book and hopefully transmitting that information, it can be a very powerful experience for people. And hopefully if they've never been to the place, they might be tempted to go.
There you go. Well said. Now, ladies and gentlemen, before my senior mind slips away and I forget to do something that I meant to do at the front of the show, we both, KJ and I both, have to give a shout out to a mutual friend of ours who we both adore. He has been on this show, and I want to get him back. And that is author David Morrell. David sent KJ to me, and I am so grateful that he did. So, David, if you're listening, we are so grateful to you and so appreciate you on so many levels, more than just your writing, but because you are a fantastic human being and someone that I know KJ could, I know I can, sit and talk to all day. Right, KJ?
Oh, yeah. I think I'm going to have to kidnap David so I can talk to him more. Kidding.
When you kidnap him, bring him to South Florida.
Yeah, I was going to say that'd be a great place to be held in captivity, right? Especially
right.
That I'll do in the winter as well, because I'm from Toronto, so it sounds good. But no, David has been an incredible mentor to me, a wonderful friend, and he has really pushed me hard to work on my writing and dig deeper emotionally into the book, and I can't be really more grateful.
If he's pushed you as far as he pushes himself, which is you've got one foot over the edge of the precipice and the other foot going, I'm coming, I'm coming. The Freedom Broker is going to be amazing. I can't wait to order it, because after you meeting Peter Moore, you got an insight into what happens that most people have no clue. Tell me how you got involved with the kidnap and ransom and then involved with Peter, which brings us back to the Freedom Broker.
Sure, I'm delighted to. As I mentioned earlier, I knew I wanted to write an international thriller, and kidnapping really fascinated me, and partly because I feel it's a purgatory of sorts. People who are kidnapped are alive, but they're not really living. Kind of their life is frozen in time like a bubble. And it's a horrible existence, really, waking up every day wondering if it's going to be your last, and, you know, being denied, you know, normal food and hygiene and all. And also you completely lose your freedom. You're basically at the beck and call of your captors. And it's a very, very powerful thing. I mean, a lot of thriller writers, focus on murder, and that is also fascinating. But for me, kidnapping was really intriguing because of the psychological components of it. So when I decided that I wanted to immerse myself in kidnapping, I searched for a kidnap and ransom conference, and believe it or not, there is such a thing.
Wow.
And it's a very small, yeah, it was quite an eye-opener. And I have had the distinct pleasure and honor of getting to know several kidnap negotiators, people who work in kidnap and ransom insurance, former hostages such as Peter Moore, and I'm happy to talk more about my experience with him because he's an incredible person, and Special Forces soldiers who deliver ransoms and execute rescues. So I basically immersed myself in kidnapping for the last 3 or 4 years because I knew I wanted to write a series about Thea Paris, who is what they call in the industry a response consultant. And that is somebody that has a to-go bag packed at all times, and when the call comes in that someone's being kidnapped, they immediately jump on a plane and travel undercover to this hot spot and try and negotiate the release of the hostage.
Interesting.
So that's sort of it in a nutshell.
So when you immersed yourself in this environment, and it's its own environment, its own culture, and it has its own heartbeat.
I would agree completely.
What was the dynamic, and how did it affect you personally, both emotionally and psychologically? And there's a reason I'm asking that. And the reason I'm asking that is because, I don't know if you know, but I do true crime. And I don't do high-profile cases. I do cases where the victims have long since been forgotten. And when I am researching those books and talking to the investigators and reading the transcripts and doing all that we do to make things right, when I am done, I am emotionally, mentally, and physically exhausted. So how did it affect you psychologically and mentally and physically and emotionally when you immersed yourself in this culture, even before you started writing?
Yeah, it's a very good question. And I think, like I said, I was so intrigued by the psychological aspects of kidnapping and the captive's mindset. And, you know, to put yourself in the shoes of hostages, I think it's really a tricky thing because, you know, we can talk about it, but unless we've actually lived it, it's very difficult to imagine what it would be like or how we would react to us being a hostage. And I think that's really fascinating because when humans are put under duress, their natural instinct is fight or flight or freeze.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
any of those reactions are incredibly dangerous and harmful during a kidnapping. You know, if you want to basically fight, then, you know, your captors are probably going to give you a very strong battering to knock you back and basically exert control. And if you try and flee, unless you've got a great escape plan and you're going to be successful at it, it's quite, you know, likely that you'll be brought back and made an example of it, if there's other hostages there especially, so that no one else tries to escape. So it's incredibly dangerous to kind of act in our normal reactions. We have to deny our hypothalamus and basically learn to live and endure the hardships, the poor hygiene, terrible food, the beatings. Many hostages go through mock executions where they kneel you down and they put a gun to your head and you don't know if it's loaded or not. They pull the trigger. It's not loaded. And you feel like that is literally your last moment. So to go through, you know, and listen to these people who have been through such hell is very emotionally draining. But it also, I feel, is an incredibly important issue to bring out. And I'm hoping that this series will bring awareness about all the hostages that are out there still today. And there's 40,000 reported kidnappings every year. And the good news is that 90% of people do end up coming home. But the news is that there's so many people out there right now, today, you know, in horrible conditions. And, you know, what are we doing? How are we going to help them come home? And, you know, my character, Thea Paris, I think, you know, there's endless series potential because there are so many different places in the world where kidnapping, you know, is rampant. And mm-hmm. it's a growing international crisis.
And would it be fair to say that when the hostages do come home, that, and this is a bad terminology, but it's the only one that comes to mind, is they come home damaged psychologically and mentally, many times physically, and for many of them, it's probably very difficult to reassimilate into freedom, depending on how long they've been held, and to understand that they're okay now.
Yeah, it's very true. I mean, sometimes they say the hardest day of a kidnapping is the day that the hostage comes home. And what I mean by that is that everyone expects you to be the same person that went away, but you're never going to be the same person. You know, you've been through horrible trauma. Many hostages suffer from PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. And, you know, it's amazing how resilient the human spirit is on the upside. You know, that many hostages do come home and are able to adapt their life so that they can still have a very happy, fulfilling life. You know, I met a lovely lady named Renee who was a former hostage. She's German, and she was held in Colombia. And she was a, you know, physiotherapist, masseuse kind of person before she was taken. And she received so many beatings, her back was, you know, destroyed. And she could never really work, you know, in that job again because of her experiences. And, you know, a lot of hostages, too, you know, they have, you know, nightmares. They have, you know, difficulty, you know, with kind of trust again, right, which is understandable given what they've been through. And there's just a host of issues, you know, that they have to work through. And I think as well, you know, psychologically speaking, do they blame themselves? You know, were they in a high-risk zone when they were taken? There's so many complicating factors when it comes to a hostage's mindset. How long were they taken? How were they treated? There's a wide variety, you know, of circumstances for hostages as well. There's some people who have absolutely horrific conditions that are barely survivable, and there's other people, you know, who are fortunate to be somewhere warm and safe, and it's horrible, but it's not, you know, as physically demanding as certain other places like a jungle. So it's really, I find it incredibly interesting, and I'm hoping in each book that I write, I'm going to delve into different aspects of kidnapping, and my goal is hopefully to entertain. I hope you'll enjoy the thriller, but as well to educate, and I hope that when you put the book down, you'll feel better informed about kidnapping.
And that brings us to Peter Moore. How did you meet him?
Well, with the very first conference I went to, I started talking to Peter because he was a speaker there, and I found it really impressive. Had a nice brief chat with him, and then it was kind of surreal, really, because the conference was over, and I thought, wow, that was a really interesting and impressive guy, but, you know, I didn't really have a long chat with him, and, you know, maybe I could have reached out with him via email. So I went to run a few errands at a mall that was half an hour away from the conference, if you can believe it. And I grabbed a quick bite at the Cheesecake Factory, and I walked to the ladies' room, and if you can believe it, Peter Moore was sitting having lunch at the same place with a friend of his after the conference. And it was sort of like kismet or karma. How can you explain that? It's like over half an hour away, same restaurant, same time, and we both looked at each other and went, hey, from the conference, right? And he invited me to join him and his friend. And from there, I have been very privileged to get to know Peter really well, and we always joke about going to the Cheesecake Factory together.
Well, would it be safe to say, KJ, that people are put in our lives when they're supposed to be there and for a reason? And it sounds like that's what happened with you and Peter. It wasn't just supposed to be a 3-minute, hi, how are you, enjoyed your talk. Your relationship was supposed to grow so that he could help you educate people with your fictional thrillers.
I agree with you 100%. I mean, we become very close friends, and, you know, that night, after he had dropped his friend off, after we sat and had a drink together and talked for hours. And then every time he's living in the UK right now, so every time I go to the UK, we always spend, you know, an entire day together hanging out, talking. And I've learned a great deal, you know, from him, and he's been very open. And I have the deepest respect for the way he actually tries to help former hostages by doing talks. And, you know, he's working on a virtual reality technology to try and help hostages deal with PTSD. He's a fascinating, intelligent guy, very much a computer whiz. And, you know, he what he went through is incredible. I mean, he was taken with 4 British military guys. So Peter was an IT genius, and he was working in Iraq at the time. And 5 of them were taken, and only Peter came home alive. And it's fascinating to me, his, you know, personal story and how he's, like, very, very good at keeping his mind active and healthy. And during captivity, he was chained to a radiator for, like, 6 months, and the wall beside him was full of cracks. So in his mind, he spent hours and hours and days designing an entire train system in his mind that he was able to replicate when he got back home. And that, you know, was such a brilliant idea, because when you're taken, you know, hostage and you're in captivity, your mind is your best asset and your worst potential enemy.
Mm-hmm.
You need to keep hope and you need to keep sharp. And so Peter, you know, you, for example, build, if you're ever, you know, held in captivity, try building an entire house in your mind, or try finding some other project that will keep you fresh and interested and, you know, and kind of focused on something other than your circumstances.
I would like to meet him myself. He would be such a joy is not the good word, an interesting person to talk with, because not only did he return, but he is probably more stronger for the experience, and or instead of in spite of the experience, because it sounds like that he found a resilience and a strength that he didn't know he had before.
Yeah, for sure. And like I said earlier, it's very difficult to predict how any of us will react when we're taking hostage. I mean, you know, you can't really have that bravado. It's about mm-hmm. the steel core inside of you, right? Are you able to maintain hope? Can you establish a routine of exercise and mental exercise as well as physical to keep yourself alive? Are you able to keep hope? I think that's the thing, right, is that you've got to have something to dream about going back to. You've got to keep that forefront in your mind that one day you will be free and one day you will do this. And even creating maybe a bucket list of things you want to do when you're free, I think could be very, very helpful.
You are amazing. You are absolutely amazing.
I think Peter is the one that's amazing.
Him too. For you to be able to... It takes a certain kind of person to be able to sit down with someone that's had that experience in like you, and delve into it, to go to these conferences, to talk to these people, and not lose yourself in their story.
Well, yeah, I mean, I feel honored, really, to have met Peter, and also... I've gotten to know a kidnapped negotiator named Frank and a couple, and Mark, and these guys are incredibly heroic. They basically risk their lives to go to these incredibly dangerous places undercover, and you know, they're able to negotiate for the release of hostages. And one of the things I found really fascinating that might surprise people is that when you say kidnap negotiator, response consultant is the industry term, and actually they quite like the term I came up with, freedom broker. And, you know, it's really quite an endeavor to be able to go to this foreign country, sit down with a hostage's family, and what they do is they find a designated speaker, you know, representative of the family, probably someone, probably not like, you know, the husband or wife or anyone so close, but maybe an mm-hmm. uncle or a close family friend, someone that's calm, that's, you know, well-spoken and good under pressure. And what they do is they walk them through talking to the kidnappers and negotiating. And I think most people with, you know, the movies, you know, show that a kidnap negotiator actually negotiating with the kidnapper himself. But what they do is they pick a family representative. And part of the reason they do that is because the intensity of their job 24/7 as a kidnap negotiator is so incredibly extreme that they can't stay in that situation for, like, you know, more than 3 weeks or so. So mm-hmm. if they can rotate out the freedom brokers and, you know, basically have this consistent person from the family talking to the kidnappers, because these kidnappings could go on anywhere from days to weeks to years. And so, you know, it's not like someone can stay with the family the entire time. So they have these people, and they train them, and they explain. And it's a fascinating process about, you know, trying to successfully, you know, negotiate the release of hostages. And as I mentioned earlier, 90% of them are successful, which is fantastic.
That I could sit and listen to you talk about this all night. Sadly, we only have an hour, but if you will so honor me to come back, because I know you've got more books coming out in this series, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm literally finishing the edits on Skyjack next, and I'll bet you can, you know, tell me what that one's about. And, you know, Thea Paris is on a plane, and she's shepherding two young orphans from Africa to London to their newly adoptive home when the plane that they're on is hijacked. And so the next book, I've been delving into airplanes and airplane safety intensively, which, you know, I'm a real research junkie. I'm a former medical writer, and I really enjoy learning. So as a result, that's my passion. And I really, like I said, like to bring, you know, some interesting facts in so that when people put the book down, hopefully they'll remember that.
Well, let's step back and talk about the Freedom Broker, because the cover has a ship on it. So
yes,
tell the folks.
Thea's father's yacht.
Uh-oh. And how did the yacht get blown up?
I don't want to say any spoilers, right? Because just in case people haven't read it, but let's just say that Thea is up against the most challenging case of her entire career, because she has a very special client, and that's her father. The Freedom Broker is kind of a very personal story for Thea. I wanted to start off the series basically sharing the reason why she became, and I'm not giving any spoilers away by telling you this, that her brother at 12 years old was kidnapped. And it profoundly changed all of, you know, the family's lives. And Thea especially, you know, basically she was the original target, and her brother was taken in her place. And so she feels a lot of guilt, you know. Her brother was, you know, definitely returned 9 months later, but he was never the same. And so the dynamic of the family, the Paris family, changed dramatically forever when that incident occurred. And it drove Thea, you know, to basically want to save hostages and have other families avoid what her family had to go through.
Now, is Thea, I'm going to say relatively young, 20s to 40s, is she?
She's in her early 30s.
Mm-hmm. Early 30s. So she really hadn't had a lot of life experiences under her belt, except for her brother being kidnapped, when she becomes this person that she becomes.
When she knew what she wanted to do, so she studied languages, and she speaks 7 languages, and she also joined the DIA, the Defense Intelligence Agency, and did a lot of training and got kind of some military experience there. So she's very tactical, as well as, you know, like negotiation-wise, right? And she did a advanced degree in international relations as well. So she's trained for all these specific things, and she's also worked in the field. And, you know, when you do this day in, day out, you learn very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And she was very fortunate to have a wonderful mentor. One of her father's friend actually owns the company that she works for, Quantum International Security.
What I find interesting and so happy to see is your main character is a strong female. And the reason I say that, KJ, is because here lately I have read too many books by too many authors, men and women alike, where their female character is not as strong as they need to be to make the book believable. But it sounds like Thea is one kick-ass broad.
Yes, that she is. Well, you know what? We've had Jason Bourne and James Bond. Don't we need a nice, strong female action hero, right?
Absolutely.
I think the world is ready. If the response to what the movie Wonder Woman is any example, I think the world is more than ready for some strong, you know, female action heroes. And, you know, I really knew I wanted to write a strong woman. That's just always been my goal. It was the dream character, basically, that I came up with. But at the same time, I really avoided her being kind of like comic book hero-ish, because I gave her a lot of vulnerabilities. One of which is that Thea Paris has type 1 diabetes. And I felt that was really incredibly important because, you know, she's got an illness, and a very serious one that she has to deal with chronically. And it's a vulnerability, an Achilles heel of sorts. And I think it makes the book more interesting because she isn't the comic book hero who can take out 6 guys at once. She's human, she's fragile, she's got an illness, and I really wanted to make her very human and vulnerable.
But yet, and while that makes
strong.
Her human, and while that makes her human and vulnerable, it also, like you said, adds to her strengths, because she knows that she has to take care of her diabetes and not go into a coma or fall out because it's dropped too low, and not have what she needs on her at all times, like peanut butter and chocolate. And the reason I say that, my husband's insulin dependent, so we've been down that path.
Oh, okay, interesting, okay.
So I understand, and it makes her probably more prone to details. The devil is always in the details, because with diabetics, the devil is always in the details.
100%. She's got to be aware of how many carbs she's ingesting. You know, she's got to be able to, you know, organize her insulin and with respect to travel and time zones, right? I mean, there's
mm-hmm.
a million things that she has to do that go above and beyond everyone else in her group that are Freedom Brokers. And I really felt strongly about adding something like this, because I also want to show people, you know, people have illnesses, but that doesn't mean they can't reach for their dreams and work at their, you know, desired career. And, you know, I think it's empowering, you know, to see a strong woman having to face a chronic illness but still triumphing.
You wrapped it all up in a nice package. And ladies and gentlemen, no, y'all cannot go get her book now, because we're not done yet. You got to wait. Because I know I'm going to order it, because I have been disappointed with strong female characters, and I don't much think I'll be disappointed. I'll be screaming, KJ, when's the new book coming out now? How soon?
Well, I it's very kind. I hope you enjoy it. I mean, you know, keep me posted. I love feedback, any kind of feedback. I always feel, you know, as a writer too, you know, I'm really hoping to grow with every book, you know, to challenge myself, to push myself harder. And as we talked about, you know, David Morrell has been a wonderful influence on me, my mentor and friend, and he's really pushed me, and I'm going to keep pushing myself too, you know, to try and tackle new things and learn as I go. You know, David's advice was always like, you know, if I'm going to spend a year writing a book, I'm going to learn something. I'm going to grow as a person as a result of it, and that's the way I feel as well. You know, you invest yourself and your life into it.
Well, and not only that, but when one puts the time in, and this is what a lot of people don't understand, that don't do like we do, that don't do the research and they don't dig for the details, they don't understand what it takes to put a piece of work out there that not only teaches life's lessons, teaches entertainment, gives entertainment, but it also has a large piece of that author in that book, in their time, their blood, their sweat, their tears, their frustrations, their hopes, their dreams. And when one does like you do and does all that research and says, I want to get better and better with each book, it shows, because the character becomes even more three-dimensional than they are in the first or even second book. Would that be a fair assessment?
Yeah, I totally agree. You know, the first book is, you know, a very personal story about, you know, the family drama, what happened in the past and how she reacts to it. And then, you know, I'm going to be taking her on many different adventures. And I do agree with you that you layer the character in with each book, and you show different sides of her and her struggles. And it's really kind of fun, too, because, you know, Thea's part of a, you know, team at Quantum International Security, and some of those characters will be recurring, and it's really nice to have that kind of a group to work with, the group dynamic too.
Mm-hmm. And
Thea
they're all
is the only female one.
Oh, that makes it even better. Yay,
mm-hmm.
Thea.
yeah, she's got to compete with those boys.
And no, ladies and gentlemen, you can't go yet. Now, there is on your website, and this is in conjunction with this, on your website, there's a quote, and the quote is, home is in Toronto, Canada, but often you are MIA. Now, ladies and gentlemen, we know now why KJ goes MIA. She's either researching a book, or she's doing things like ziplining in Costa Rica, or racing camels in Jordan, or diving with the great whites, because are going to Victoria Falls because she wants your experience with her books to be as close to her experience with that adventure. Would that be a fair statement?
Yeah, 100%. I visit like the places I write about. For example, in the Freedom Broker, we visit Santorini, which is one of the most beautiful islands in the entire world. Highly recommended if you haven't been. Athens, Greece, and then Victoria Falls in Zimbabwe. And I've been to all those places and spent intensive time there trying to bring the sights, sounds, and smells to the reader so that if you haven't been to the place, you'll be tempted to go. And if you have been, I'm hoping I'll bring back some fond memories.
You are amazing. You are absolutely amazing. Now, just don't do like David did. Don't go off to England and Scotland for 3 years and we don't hear from you.
No. I've got too many jobs to do here. I'm afraid I can't be disappearing. But it would be lovely to do that. I'd love to live abroad and write, you know, novels from where you're actually, you know, setting it. That would be incredible.
Wouldn't that be? It'd be absolutely amazing to just immerse yourself.
Maybe one
into,
day.
Yeah. Well, stranger things have been known to happen. Who knows? You find yourself down here in Port St. Lucie and place Thea down here on the intercoastal for whatever reason. Who knows?
I'd love to come and be beautiful.
Yes, it is absolutely. Ladies and gentlemen, it's paradise. I don't know what to tell you, but it's paradise. Now, believe it or not, our hour is going to be up shortly. I told you this hour would fly by, and we haven't even scratched the surface of your life. And I mean, ladies and gentlemen, she's an avid tennis player. She's a cyclist. She's a swimmer. She does all this wonderful, wonderful stuff that she could write a book about on all of her adventures that she's had and put Thea in the middle of them. And she would be writing from now until Armageddon. Where can folks find you if they want to keep up with you and see what great adventure you go on next?
Well, definitely come visit my website at kjahow.com. And I have a map on there, if you're going to be traveling, that gives the kidnap hotspots of the world. So I always say to people, I often do talks as well on travel safety because it's a fascination of mine. And so check out that map if you're going to be traveling and make sure that if you are going to a place, you know, where that is a kidnap zone, to take the proper precautions. If you have any questions about that, don't hesitate to email me via my website. And I'm also going to be, I'm the executive director of Thriller Fest, and so July 11 to 15, which is coming up very soon, I'll be in New York City. And if you are around and can come join us at Thriller Fest, I think you'd have a grand time. We have some spectacular guests coming this year, including Lee Child, Lisa Gardner, Steve Barry, David Morrell. I mean, the list, Nelson DeMille, Kathy Reichs, the list just goes on and on. So I
all
highly recommend
all of my husband's favorites. Those are all of
well,
my husband's favorites.
Come on
offers.
Down. We'd love
I would
to have you there.
If he could travel, I would. In a heartbeat, I'd say, let's go to New York City. And he would. But he reads every one of those people.
Wow. If you need any signed books, let me know, because I'm happy to take care of you. But it's such a great group. And then, you know, I'm going to be at BoucherCon in my home city of Toronto in the fall. And a lot of top thriller authors will be there. So I highly recommend if you can make it there. And, you know, I love hearing from readers, so if you're kind enough to give the book a read, please let me know what you think. And I wanted to mention as well that because of Canada Day and the U.S. Independence Day, I was very lucky to be featured for the next, so starting the 26th of June to the July 10th, my ebook is going to be on a special promotion on all the platforms for only $2.99. So
wow.
If someone's willing to take a chance on me for $2.99. Give her a whirl. So just thought I'd mention that because I just found out about that this week.
That's amazing.
Mm-hmm. I feel lucky, very lucky.
So, ladies and gentlemen, go and get KJ's book and read it, because I guarantee you, if you are a thriller reader or if you've never been a thriller reader, this is the best time to start. Not only is the book entertaining, fun, educational, it has a very strong female character, which I love.
Yeah, I felt really, you know, I agree mm-hmm. with you. I'm huge into, you know, like woman power, right? Let's have some great, and there's some strong guys in there as well, just to make sure the guys don't feel left out.
Well, I don't think they have that to worry about, and they've been strong for many, many years.
That's true, I guess. But I'm an equal opportunity strength, you know, advocate.
There you go. And ladies and gentlemen, go on her website, friend her on Facebook, because I'm going to tell you, just in the time that I've done my homework on KJ and prepared for this show, spent a few minutes with her before we went live, and then have talked to her during this hour, I'm going to tell you, she is amazing to me. I am in awe of her. She is now one of my favorite authors. And I say that from the bottom of my heart. And
you're
I didn't
very,
read
very
you
kind. I was going to say, you know, I don't want to disappoint you now. I'm feeling a lot of pressure.
No. There's no way you will not disappoint. But the people that know me will tell you I only speak the facts. And I cannot wait if you would be willing to come back on the show when let me bring you back in January, because by then the second book will be out and you'll probably be starting on the third and may have been on some more adventures.
I would be absolutely delighted to. And I really wanted to thank you from the bottom of my heart for having me on tonight. It's been a real pleasure, and I could listen to your Southern accent all night long. Beautiful.
Oh, thank you so much. I am originally from Georgia and I moved to Florida in 2006, and I thought I had lost my accent, but people keep telling me I haven't. Take
Never
the girl out of
it.
Georgia.
It's beautiful.
Thank you. You can take the girl out of Georgia, but I don't think you can take the Georgia out of the girl. It just doesn't. It doesn't happen.
Have you ever met Steve Barry? He's got the most beautiful Georgian accent as well.
No, I have never met him.
You must have him on your show sometime, because he is a terrific interview.
Hook this girl up.
I will. Be delighted.
You heard it first, ladies and gentlemen. Now, when the show goes dark, don't hang up, because I'm going to give you some things. But thank you so much for the honor and the pleasure of coming on this show and spending an hour of your time with me. It means more than you will ever know. And
it's
ladies
been an
and gentlemen,
pleasure.
I'm glad it has. Ladies and gentlemen, tomorrow night, author Kathy Weinfeld will be with us. It is her first time on the show, and you all know that I have several things I say at the end of the show. One of those is, if you want to be successful, stop asking permission. The other one is, don't just feel special, be special. And the third one is this: your smile is your logo, your personality is your business card. And how you leave others feeling after having had an experience with you, ladies and gentlemen, that does become your trademark. So remember that when you're out and about, and maybe you're having a bad day, but someone else is having a worse day. How you leave them feeling after you leave, they will remember for the rest of their life. So tomorrow night, at 8 o'clock Eastern Daylight Time, author Kathy Weinfeld. And again, I want to thank author KJ Howe, H-O-W-E, for spending an hour with me and teaching me so many wonderful things. And David Morrell, if you happen to listen, you did good. Thank you for hooking KJ and I up. It is an honor. It is a privilege. So until tomorrow night, ladies and gentlemen, at 8 o'clock Eastern Daylight Time, remember this: This is Off the Chain. I am your host, Yvonne Mason, and we are all dreamers. So make your dreams absolutely real. Until tomorrow night, we say good night. Okay, we're off the air, but everything we say will go up in the archives portion. But I wanted to let you know that when this show goes up in archives, once it archives, I'm going to put it on my page and I'm going to tag you in it, just like I tagged about the show going live. You're welcome. Oh, it gets better. Tomorrow, I will put it up on 5 podcasts. It goes up on SoundCloud, MixCloud, Spreaker, Podcast.com, and Podcast Garden. When I put it up on those podcasts, I will also put the links on my page and tag you in it, and it gets better than that. This show, this show also goes up on iTunes, YouTube, FM.com, TuneIn Radio, and Stitcher, which is heard on Sirius Radio.
That's incredible.
And then some oddball podcasts that people take the link and put it up on their podcast. So that's how we get 67 plus countries and over 21,000 listeners.
That's incredible. Wow.
And it's all because of people like you that agree to come on my show and put up with me for an hour.
Oh, I think it's your great hosting ability that draws them in. It's wonderful. I'm really happy for your success. I mean, that's pretty special.
Well, it's our success. I'm just a facilitator. It's because of all of y'all and the fact that y'all are willing to come on. You're willing to talk about yourselves. You're willing to talk about your experiences. And this is what I tell the listeners as well as my guests. Our books are not our products. Our music is not our product. Our business is not our product. We are the product.
I agree.
And so when when we're willing to sell ourselves, then this is what happens. The people they come in because they want to hear more. And we always leave them wanting to hear more because we didn't even talk about your ziplining in Costa Rica and how you got in Costa Rica.
Yeah, well, next time for sure we'll zipline in. That's how we'll do the intro. What do you say?
All right, that works. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, really, thank you for doing such a lovely job and great questions.
You're quite welcome, and thank you for being so open and educational. And if you happen to see Steve Barry, tell him, yes, he really wants to come on this show. He'll have fun.
I will. I know Steve really well, so
I'll
put a bug in his ear.
Oh, James Swain's coming on December the 12th.
Great.
So I'll put that up. He's got a new book coming out too, by the way. So we'll be talking about his new book. It's coming out on December the 5th.
What's the name of the new book coming?
I don't know. It's on ebook, but it's left me because I haven't done his prep work yet. But he does have a new one, and he's
great.
He is one of the funniest people I've ever had the opportunity to meet. He's hysterical.
Oh, that's nice. I love that.
I do too. So I will contact you closer when I get back to my office and sit down and look at January's dates, and I will send you a few dates, and you tell me which are open and when you're going to be somewhere where you can get on the phone.
Yeah, exactly.
And we'll go from there. And if January's not good, we'll roll it into February. Whatever's going to be good for you.
Okay, sounds lovely. I really appreciate that. It's very sweet.
All right, darling, we'll talk to you later.
Yeah. Thanks again, and I'm really glad David connected us. Very nice to meet you.
It was nice to meet you, even if it was over the phone and the microphone.
Exactly. In Port St. Lucie, here I come one time.
I'll show you everything there is to see. If you haven't been to the Seal Museum, we'll go to the Seal Museum. We've got a botanical garden. There's all kinds of stuff to see. Yeah.
Sounds heavenly.
So come on.
Anyway, you take good care, and thanks again.
All right, honey. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye.
Oh, amazing. Mommy didn't mean to step.